You've tuned in. Now you're going to get turned on to the Geek Show. I'm Quentin Flynn. People know me as Axel, who says, got it memorized. You should. The Geek Show. It rocks.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Press X on the Geek Show Podcast Network. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew and another Rob.
Javier, no, my name is Rob, not another Rob.
Yeah, his name is just Rob, but he is not me with a different voice.
Yeah, it's his first time listening. This is Press X, and sometimes it's not immediately obvious what show it is when it starts, because if this is your first time listening, here's a hint. We have a habit of rambling. So now that hint's out the way, and I've told you what the show is, Press X.
Yes, I know. I said Press X. I just didn't say what the show was about. We are a video game show.
I'm just trying to think any other scenario where Press X would actually suit other than gaming.
Oh, they exist.
I know it's like cut on the keyboard when you press Control and X.
It's also farming when you want to sort of put a brand on a cow's butt. It's a big...
Are we no longer the game show? We're now the branding show.
There's a big X pressed onto that cow's butt. Or whatever, you know, animal that you deal in your farm. You might want a circle on your farm. I don't know. I'm not a fascist for this sort of thing. C'est la vie, as they say.
Yes.
Anywho, we have games to get through. And assuming the world hasn't set on fire on account of me poking the bear with Danganronpa on the last episode, let's get a rolling, I think.
Well, we can start off with... It's a very puzzly game we're playing now. A crossover. We don't get many of those often.
Hang on. And a puzzly crossover?
Yes.
What exactly are we talking about here?
We are talking about Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Hang on. Puyo Puyo what?
Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Of all the words to get confused with there, Tetris is not the one you should have got confused with, Rob. Tetris is household name.
No, the confusing bit was Puyo Puyo, and then the last word being Tetris was unexpected.
Well, it's a crossover game. We don't get many, I don't think, but we haven't in quite a while. But this is a game that came out on the PlayStation 3 in Japan about 3 years ago. And it's come over here on the PS4 and Nintendo Switch.
Wow.
And this is the PS4 version that I've been playing.
Hang on. So it came out in Japan 3 years ago. And it's just come out here.
It came out in Japan in the February 2014 on the PS3, 3DS, Wii U, and PS Vita.
Yeah.
And the Xbox One in December. But the PS4 and Nintendo Switch worldwide, it's only come out last month. So it's quite a delay.
Is this game so addictive they just didn't have the time in between playing it to release it in the West?
Well, I always knew this, the Puyo Puyo, as Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
See, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine just makes it sound like Dr. Robotnik farts a lot.
But anyway, I'll start off with... I'll go through the modes. It's probably the easiest you can explain a game like this, because there is quite a few. Firstly is your standard versus mode. Technically, this game is versus. You can choose which puzzle game you want to play, such as Puyo Puyo or Tetris. And you can face somebody either online or offline, computer or local multiplayer, where you can play totally separate games against each other.
How does that work?
Which, to me, it's basically one side's playing Tetris.
And that's like saying, say me and Rob decided to play head-to-head against each other. He'd be playing Call of Duty, I'll be playing FIFA.
Exactly. But these are similar in a sense. Tetris being you have to create a line of 10 and fill the line out.
Yeah.
And Puyo Puyo is more colour. It's more get 4. Well, it's like a round blob now. Used to be like a shell type thing in a run and the pop. So technically, it is roughly the same.
So you have to pop a brown blob?
Oh, I don't think they're brown. More like red, blue, and yellow.
Right, okay. I was confused.
That sounds even worse. But anyway.
Yes.
That's one mode. And this, now it gets, this is where it gets really confusing. You've got swap mode,
yeah,
where you can face each other or play by yourself, where you could be playing a game of Tetris, and then it'll automatically switch to a game of Puyo Puyo, and you have to finish both games and manage both games. Remember where you are. Which, that's quite tricky. That's very tricky if you don't know your... Well, if you don't know one of the games, it's hard. If you don't know both the games, it's twice as hard.
Okay. This sounds challenging.
There's fusion mode, which, as it says, Puyos and what they call... I've just looked up the word, and the Tetraminos, the Tetris blocks. So they're not blocks. They're Tetraminos. It's basically both games on one board. You get Puyos falling, and you get these Tetris Tetraminos falling as well. And you have to try and get the lines and get the colours and line them up. So you get, like, combo.
Yeah.
And it's very challenging. I mean, it's throw the controller at the wall challenging.
That batter.
But it's fun.
I don't do that when I'm challenged. What I do is I put it on mute and roll my sleeves up. That's when I know something's really, really difficult. That's my method.
But I don't harm the controller. I put a cushion on the wall.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I wish I did.
I broke my N64 one doing that. I think it was the water temple in Ocarina of Time. Threw it at the wall, and after that, it just had something clacking around inside of it.
That's before Google.
See, up until I played Final Fantasy VII, the main cause of controllers, or joysticks in my case, because I had a Commodore Amiga, main cause of me breaking any joysticks was my brother whenever I beat him at sensible soccer or, you know, kickoff or something like that. He'd literally snap the joystick and then we'd have a fight, you know, which would end up with me in a headlock.
That's definitely going back when you say joystick, Rob.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of local multiplayer.
But anyway, there's two more modes. I'll go through them quickly because this one's very complicated. This is called Big Bang Mode.
Okay.
Yes, you heard it right. Big Bang Mode.
What, does the Sheldon Cooper suddenly come out and distract you?
Basically, this puts you in a harder type of face-off type game where, for example, the Tetris blocks, you'd automatically get a pre-assigned half of the board of Tetris blocks with gaps in the middle. So you have to try and make a combo to get rid of all those before it gets to the top, and you've only got, let's just say, a quarter of the board to go. And
that then, sounds tough.
And when you take into account with the Puyo Puyo rules as well, where every time you pop a balloon, if you get a combo, it sends what they call garbage, trash, depends what game you're playing, over to the opposing player. So what you get is very panicky.
So it's kind of a beat-the-clock scenario type thing.
Yeah. But, and then at the end as well, you get this little big bang animation. But it's a very complicated mode, but I do recommend giving it a go.
Okay.
Last but not least, you get party mode. And that is basically, well, the two games again, but you get various items just dropped. For example, there's one called Spotlight, I think it's called, where it'll literally go black and you can only see where the spotlight goes. So it's a really fun game. And there is a story mode added as well, but it is basically all these different modes just placed into a very, very long cutscene narrative.
How do you do a story mode for Tetris?
Well, basically, we seem to be going through a very space-related couple of shows, but they go to this spaceship, they get beamed up to the spaceship and meet somebody, and then they just... Well, then me and somebody caught with Ringo, I think his name is. And, yeah, it's basically just, you know, the games where you get the subtitles and you have to, similar to Zelda, where you have to keep on pressing the
button.
But it's so long.
So it's like the talking heads type thing.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Piri Piri Tetris.
Piri Piri Tetris.
That's Puyo Puyo Tetris. And I do recommend it as well. No doubt it'll be brilliant on the Switch as well, handheld.
Possibly better on the Switch, I suppose. Mm.
But if you do like your Tetris and Puyo Puyo, and you don't mind the frustrating chance of getting stuck every now and again, and the loss of a few controllers, you'll be fine.
Sorry, I'm still chuckling about the Peri Peri Tetris.
Yeah, that's the next one. Hot and spicy blocks.
You got a bad case of spicy blocks, have you?
Good job I never said hot and spicy blobs.
Yes, that's even better.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Me.
Moving from challenging and amusing to just plain challenging and kind of dark, we got A Rose in the Twilight, which is a new platform game for the Vita, and it's interesting, to say the least. It's a very kind of dark fantasy... Let's see if I can explain this right. Rose in the Twilight is essentially a puzzle platformer. A lot of people are comparing it to... Remember the old Ico game on the PS2? Now, a lot of people are bringing up Ico because because the art style... the character design is reminiscent of Yomiwari Night Alone, which I absolutely adore that game, and it is getting a sequel as well, by the way. But it's very simplistic as well, and it plays out like a fairy tale. It's very simple, kind of. It's a very simple puzzle mechanic that uses color, and it reminded me of an old iOS game that I played called The Beautiful Dream. Can't remember which company developed it, but that was a really gorgeous game. Very kind of ancient Chinese folktale type story. You had a guy going around trying to find the love of his life, and he had to use different colors to puzzle his way through different areas. And A Rose in the Twilight's kind of the same, except it's a physics puzzler using color, or physics, kind of. The whole object is you take on the role of a girl called Rose, who wakes up in a dungeon with no memory of how she got there and a giant thorn stabbed through her back. And it turns out that Rose is cursed, and you have to try and figure out a way for Rose to escape from the dungeon, right? She doesn't know how she's ended up there. Now, you progress through the dungeon in a very placid manner at first, but you find there's things that you can't do. It has a nice tutorial where you're going through the dungeon and it shows you what to do. But you'll find that the puzzles very, very quickly after you get the golem, because there is a character, secondary character called the golem. And the golem is big, has no voice, but can pick up and throw things, including Rose. And the golem is helping Rose to escape the dungeon. So there's only the two characters, and you can swap between the two. Rose is the only one who can use the colors. She can absorb blood, which is the color red, and she can pass that color on to other objects to move them, because otherwise they'll be static, frozen in time kind of thing. Whereas Golem can pick up red objects and throw them, but he can't touch anything else. But he can also pass through thorn barriers and stuff like that without being harmed, whereas Rose would die if she goes through them. And so you progress through the dungeon and you get these puzzles, but they become more and more challenging. But the weird thing is, you don't really get that frustrated. You just see it as, I'm determined to finish this. I'm determined to get past this and see what happens next. Do you see what I mean? It's not the throw the controller or throw the Vita at the wall type frustration. It's just more of a, I want to finish this. I want to progress this story. I want to see, you know, I want to know why she's in this weird and wacky dungeon.
I know that's the one thing that I love on some games where you don't get frustrated, because the amount of games that I've just decided to stop playing because it's just too hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this sounds quite good.
Yeah. Well, I call the golem golem, but I call it a golem because it's basically a rock that moves. In the game, it's called Giant. I should point that out. And there are a couple of other characters that you'll meet, like Sister and Blanc and Viola. But Rose is very much kind of by herself progressing through this, and it is very dark. You'll reach these checkpoints where you'll go through, and then it'll go to the cinematic sequence, which tells you, which plays out like one of those old shadow players that they have in Japan. And it tells the story of something dark and sinister that happened, and there's usually blood involved, which is why, and the blood motif is strong in this game. You know, Blood and Thorns is, they could have literally called this game Blood and Thorns, you know, and it would have fit just as well. A Rose in the Twilight is kind of a nod, I think, to the whole Snow White story. Or maybe Sleeping Beauty, I don't know. But anyway, it is a nod to the old style fairy tales. Now, we got sent the limited edition version of this, right? And it came with some really nice little extras. There's a visual art book that came with it, and a CD of the music, and a little keyring of Rose, which is really cute, by the way. But the prize that came with this is, you know, they do those rubberized figures that feel, you know, those stress balls that you get, right? This is one of those foam figures that's a bit, that's basically, the it's produced a bit like a stress ball, but it's a figure of the giant, and it's really nice. And it's weird how something with no face, all it has is a swirl for a face, how something like that can actually be rather cute.
Something goes through my mind whenever any company decide to create a limited or collector's edition. That meeting where they decide what goes in it,
yeah,
must be absolutely brilliant, because I've seen some crackers.
Yeah, I mean, with this, the animation is kind of basic, because a lot of the emphasis has gone on to the atmosphere, the story, and the puzzles. So, and the animation really doesn't need to be anything flash, which is one of the nice things about the game. It's a lovely little game. It's a challenging little game. And it's weird how at this stage of the Vita, because the Vita's been around for several years, but it's weird how from Japan we're starting to get more interesting games for the Vita now than we did before. Yeah. This one's a game that I couldn't put down as soon as I started playing it. I played it for hours on the first day.
So definitely recommended.
Oh, definitely recommended. Not so highly recommended, though, is Toy Odyssey.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a PC-based action platformer with some RPG stuff in there. And that one was made by Hiker Games. The Rose in the Twilight is from NIS America, if I remember rightly. And Toy Odyssey's an odd one. You play a toy in a house, and the house is being invaded by dark forces, and you have to go out and rescue various toys and protect the house, or help to protect the house from these dark invading forces. And you can basically upgrade your weapons, upgrade your armor, upgrade various other things, and you can explore through these procedurally generated rooms. So the rooms are... The basic design of the ground area of the room is the same, but as you reach the ceiling, the platforms are all different. So it's kind of a randomly generated dungeon type thing. And each of these rooms is an instance, so you have to work your way through the room, fighting various things. And you will eventually, you do fight boss characters and stuff like that from time to time. You basically are a soldier going through, you're basically a swordsman, and you're working your way through, and you get a variety of different weapons, from boomerangs and shuriken to long swords to halberds and various things like that. And you're working your way through from like plastic to wooden to metal based weapons. And as you're going through, you can basically rescue other toys who are sentient as well, who help you. And also, one of the jobs you have to do is fortify the bedroom of the kid that you're protecting. You've got to fortify his bedroom against invading dark forces as well. So there's several different aspects to this game. But the game is still a very, very basic action platformer. Very much a kind of Metroidvania, even though I hate using that term. It's very much a Metroidvania type game.
Sounds all together, though, like a dark emo Toy Story meets Abe's Odyssey toy form.
Actually, it's less Toy Story. It's less dark emo Toy Story and more Toys meets Toy Story.
Mm.
Remember that Robin Williams film called Toys, where at the end you have a war between the war toys and the actual toys? It's more like that. It's more like the actual toys are going to war against the war toys and against little animals and insects and stuff like that as well. You know, one of the enemies that I hate in this game are the spiders, because they're big hairy things. But Toy Odyssey is an oddball game. It's got some issues when it comes to like the animation. There's been loads of times when I've went to hit something and it turns out that it's not there, but normally you'd be able to hit it fine. Or you want to jump on a platform and the platform is actually, you know, the collision detection is a little bit wonky at times. But in general, the game's quite a lot of fun to play. It is challenging in a different way to Rose in the Twilight because this one has very little in the way of puzzles. A lot in the way of climbing things, running, slashing things, and running and collecting things. It's a lot of fetch quests in this, whereas A Rose in the Twilight is more a platform puzzler.
Ah, right.
So, Toy Odyssey. Interesting. Worth a look. You know, it's definitely worth a look, especially if you like your platform games. But if I had to choose between A Rose in the Twilight and Toy Odyssey, I'd have to say A Rose in the Twilight just pips it.
Ah, right. Interesting.
Yeah, even though Toy Odyssey is more traditional platform game type thing. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it does have RPG elements, and it does use them reasonably well, but it wasn't the RPG that I wanted to talk about today, because the RPG I wanted to talk about today is, it has alchemy. It has cuteness, and it has alchemy, and it is, obviously, Atelier Ferris, The Alchemist, and The Mysterious Journey. Now, you guys know I am a terminal fan of the Atelier series.
Atelier series?
I wouldn't use the word terminal, I'd use the word tedious.
I love the games.
You're a tedious fan of that series.
Okay, tedious is fine. Terminal, tedious, I don't care. I love the Atelier series, and there are reasons why I love the Atelier series. Whenever I play RPGs, I mainly play RPGs that have crafting in there somewhere. I like RPGs where I make stuff. I don't just like breaking stuff, I like making stuff and then using the stuff I make to break stuff. Does that make sense?
My head's just gone really Lego-y again.
Yeah, basically. I mean, if I was playing Minecraft, I'd basically be making loads of weapons and going out and breaking stuff with it. But anyway, Atelier Ferris is the latest installment in the long-running Atelier franchise. It is, I think, the 18th game in the main series or something like that. So
it's, that's a long, long series.
Yeah, it's the 18th game of the main series, and this is the second one in the Mysterious trilogy. I'm assuming it's going to be a trilogy because the Atelier games always tend to go as trilogies. This is the sequel to Atelier Sophie, The Alchemist and the Mysterious Book. Sophie Neuenmüller actually makes an appearance in Atelier Ferris. Now, you take on the role of Ferris Mistlud, who is a young girl. She is living in a town in a cavern, and there are these massive doors that protect the town from the outside world. People go outside to hunt and stuff like that, but mainly what they do in the town is mining, and she has a talent for finding minerals for the miners to mine. And that's basically what she does during the day. Everyone in the town is kind of friendly-like, and they're not really untrustworthy of strangers, but they're kind of standoffish. But yeah, Ferris, she wants to go outside. You know, she desperately wants to go outside, so much so that she keeps staring at the door. She visits the door to the outside world several times a day, and she pines about going outside. Her sister, Leanne, is a warrior who goes outside, and she hunts and stuff like that, and Ferris is always pestering her for stories of the outside world. And so one day, Ferris has an argument with her parents, and she says she hates them, runs to the door, and just stands there because she can't open the door by herself, only to become the victim of an explosion from the other side of the door, because somebody on the other side of the door has, well, not accidentally, thrown a bomb at it. And the person who's thrown a bomb at it is Sophie Neuenmüller, who is the main character from the first, from Atelier Sophie. And she's accompanied by the android, I think. Plakta is an android, I'm not sure. Nobody seems to be sure what she is, but she's accompanied by Plakta, who's basically telling her she's been an idiot for using a bomb on a door that she couldn't open. She could have just waited until someone opened it, because obviously the door's been used several times, so people are passing through it. But Sophie's a bit impatient. And so that's the first meeting of Sophie and Ferris. Ferris gets the opportunity through Sophie to go outside by becoming an alchemist. But she can't become a formal alchemist. And this is where the interesting part of the game comes in, right? Now, in a lot of the games, alchemy has become less a magic thing and more an actual job. You being an alchemist is basically part of your job, right? So you're supposed to basically do these quests. You're supposed to take on these commissions. You're supposed to earn money and prove your worth as an alchemist. And part of that whole scenario, Firis has 1 year to go to the capital and take the alchemy exam and become an officially recognized alchemist. And so your time limit for this game is 1 year. And this game has an active day and night cycle, everything like that. And when you are making alchemy recipes, they take time as well. So part of your game in this is actually planning your calendar and working through different scenarios of the game. And that 1 year, it does get used up quite quick, because if you don't make it to the capital by the end of the year, you basically lose the game.
You have to start all over again.
Well, you don't have to start all over again. You can start from the last, a certain save. That's the one big thing about this game. One of the big changes is you have that set time limit. You have a finite amount of time to finish the game, right? And that puts a lot of pressure on you to progress through the story as quickly as possible, which adds its own challenge, because you might not be strong enough to progress through certain areas of the world. But you still have, but that, you know, that time limit is pushing you to move forward. This is one of those odd games, because normally when I play RPGs, I like doing the side quests and I like taking my time and stuff like that. But playing Atelier Ferris, I didn't actually have that luxury. But that's also one of the beauties about this game, because there are little side quests, but they're staggered throughout the game and they don't take up too much time. So you can do them quite easily. But the game doesn't end after that year. After you successfully become an alchemist, you can then go on and explore the rest of the world. And this is an open world game now as well. The Atelier games have finally gone full open world, right? The camera at first is a little shonky. You have to adjust the sensitivity of the camera because it's too fast, right? But you can adjust the sensitivity of the camera. You can adjust the speed of the camera so you can get it to a comfortable level. But the fact that you can actually explore the rest of the world and go out and continue doing missions and stuff like that until you get bored of things, right, after you finish the actual main story scenario, that's one of the really nice things about this game. Because the Atelier games, the beauty of them is just taking your time, crafting things, making things, that sort of thing. In a sense, they're very genteel when it comes to the whole RPG thing. They're not really meant to be taken seriously as seriously as something like The Witcher or something like that. They're very, very charming. They're very cute. That doesn't make them any less enjoyable than other games like The Witcher or Persona or something like that. It doesn't make them any less enjoyable than any of those games. But the Atelier games have their own unique kind of niche when it comes to RPGs, especially JRPGs. They're there for people to just sit back and relax. And after you've played all the other games, you might find that you want something completely different, something it's like, I don't know, putting your feet into a foot spa at the end of a hard day of standing up, you know, just something soothing and relaxing at the same time. And that's why I like them. You know, I have enough stresses in my life.
That's his opinion of them at the very least. My opinion of them is a little less complimentary. I honestly found the Atelier games, the two I've played, possibly among the most tedious RPG experiences I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, but you're not a big crafter.
It's got nothing to do with the crafting. It's got to do with the universe and the crossover of it. It's the same with the Tales franchise. It has an awful lot of that. You got a player list, they want to stand that, and that character's from here, and there's significance, and it means something if you played that one, and that bit is padded out if you've also played this one.
Not really. I mean, with the Atelier games, because they're essentially trilogies, each trilogy is usually discrete from the rest of the games. It's just those games in that trilogy. So
yeah, and also I found them cloyingly cutesy.
Yeah.
Wee.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all, you know. It's just the sort of, it's for me, I think it was like PlayStation 2 era. It is like an era, a few years, a little pocket, a few years, maybe being PlayStation 1, actually. Well, yeah, it was PlayStation 1, sorry. Where all I played was RPGs, JRPGs, and this just sounds like another one of them, unfortunately, you know.
Well,
but I think that comes from burnout.
That's what I mean. In all honesty, I think that comes from the actual art style rather than burnout on the... Because the story in this is very simple. It's not about... It's kind of like, remember I did, we covered Sorcerer Saga, The Curse of the Great Curry God, a while ago, and I said, the great thing about this game, yeah, I know, there is an actual Vita RPG called that, okay? It's a roguelike RPG dungeon crawler called Sorcery Saga, the Curse of the Great Curry God.
He doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't hurl Peri Peri Tetris blocks, does he?
No, he doesn't, but oh, how I wish he did. But anyway, that game wasn't about saving the world or, you know, anything like that. It wasn't about big heroes and big villains. It was all about one girl trying to save her favorite curry shop, right? And that's why I liked it, was because it was taking the whole RPG thing and just not using the typical scenario. And this is the same. Atelierferis is essentially the same. It's not about saving the world or anything like that. It's just this girl wants to explore the outside world, which she hasn't had access to all her life. And the only way she's allowed to do that is by becoming an alchemist, and she's got a year to do it. That's it. And
that's fine that you like it.
All I'm
merely illustrating is that is a very big binary of this. You either adore it or hate it. There's no real in-between, I've found. And personally, I don't like saying this about any franchise, but I kind of hate it.
See, this is the thing. I think the binary is because you hate it, but a lot of the people I've spoken to don't mind it. They like it. They'll either enjoy it or they'll treat it as, yeah, I've given it a try. Wasn't for me, but I can see the good points. Or they'll outright hate it. It's a lot more grey from where the people that I've spoken to. But then again, I can understand that. It's not for everybody. It's not the typical style RPG. Sorry, you were saying, Andy?
I was going to say, I could take this from an outside view because I haven't played that series yet.
Yeah.
But to me, that it could be a breath of fresh air because majority of games I play always have this you have to save the world element to it.
That's the big element to loads of these games, whether it's a Western RPG or an Eastern one. A big element is you have to defeat the big bad. You have to save the world. You have to. It's absolutely on your shoulders. And, you know, the Italian games have kind of gone, well, why?
Yeah, I think that's me, though, personally. I think I've just checked out with the whole concept of the RPG.
JRPGs especially, I think, though, rather than RPGs.
Both.
Really?
Yeah, I'm that one guy in what feels like a million who doesn't like any of the Bethesda RPGs.
I don't know,
at all. I mean, I tried so hard to like Fallout. I tried so hard, both of them, and I was just completely numb to do it. I tried so hard to like the Elder Scrolls games. It just didn't work.
It just takes time for you to get into those games.
I played about 80 hours of it, Andy.
Nah, if you don't like them, Andy, you don't like them. I mean, I kind of have to side with Rob on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fallout games, Fallout 3 I thought was an amazing game, right?
It's not really.
No, when it came out, I thought it was an amazing game. But if you look back on it now, it doesn't hold up as well.
Mm. It's the same with JRPGs. It's just, it's kind of, you know that figure of speech, I'll be me. No, I'll do me, you do you.
Mm. Yeah, I don't like that.
I know I don't like it either, but it feels like a very fitting description for what the JRPGs is. They're just kind of, this is my corner. If you don't like my corner, you can just, you know, go and occupy yourself another way, perhaps.
See, this is the
thing. And that's why I just generally didn't like the Atelier stuff, because it doesn't feel like it tries to include people who aren't already singing from the same hymn sheet.
See, this is the thing. I think that's fair criticism of the older Atelier games, including the stuff that came out on the PS3, right? But these last two titles, Atelier Sophie and Atelierferis, have really started making some very big and very sweeping changes to the games, to the crafting system. I mean, the crafting system in Atelierferis is very, very different. It's all about placement of ingredients and stuff like that as well. But it's also open world as well, which is what more people want now.
You know? Really? That's just kind of annoying me in it as well.
Well, this is the thing. The Atelier game is new to the open world thing. Okay. Atelierferis is the first open world Atelier game. So I think in the scope of open world gaming, I can understand why people are sick of open world games, but in the scope of the Atelier franchise, I'm actually quite happy that it's finally gone open world, because one of the frustrating things about the Atelier games has always been that it wasn't open world.
Yeah, I have like an argument to make about how open world games is pretty much going to cause the impending video games crash.
Yeah.
That's it's very easy lines to draw between those two things, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to bore people listening to this, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, with the Atelier games, it's fine if you don't like it, you know. I like the Atelier games because you have so many JRPGs coming out year after year after year, and they're always exactly much of a muchness. They're always, yeah, they're exactly the same. They have the same sort of stories. They have the same
strive to look like an anime.
Yeah.
They have the blah, 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 snore.
Yeah. Whereas the Atelier games, you know, the development of the Atelier games seems to be going in the opposite direction to the trends, especially if you look at, the costume design, the character design is still very anime, but it's moved away from the kind of, they still have the anime type cutscenes, but the actual gameplay, the actual characters in the game, the CG models, are starting to move away from the typical anime design, you know, the flat characters that look cute and everything like that. You still have the CG cuts, the anime CG cutscenes, the cel-shaded cutscenes, I should say. But the actual thing is moving away, the intros. The actual game itself is moving away and moving more towards CG models who are starting to get more definition in the facial features and stuff like that. Do you see what I mean? So it's weird because the Atelier games seem to be doing the opposite of what the trend in JRPGs is. And that's one of the reasons I like it. In a very odd way, the Atelier games are the punks of JRPG because they're doing their own thing and they're saying, we don't care.
It's punks. If you put that statement with what the game actually looks like, it's quite a funny image.
I know.
Yeah, because it's basically like calling your granddad a punk because he doesn't care anymore.
Yeah.
But if your granddad was like wearing like a gothic Lolita outfit or something.
Well, you can't get more punk than that, can you?
Nah. Anyway, I'm going to use that as a linking point because it was a kind of innate one there.
Yeah.
Because another RPG series, which is kind of diverging from, at least in this iteration, I've not played the previous ones, which is diverging from like JRPG stock.
Yeah.
Is Persona 5. The story is you play an unnamed student. I've named him Hiromu Nakamura because giving him my own name in a Japanese setting would just be weird.
Yeah, I don't understand why people want to do that. Why do you give your character your name?
Yeah, he's like a Japanese-looking kid. Oh, he's not me.
Doesn't that happen?
No.
Just put your surname first.
No, Japan's kind of racist. If it was a kid called my name in Japan, he'd have been ousted and kicked out of the country or something. But anyway, my point is...
No, it'd just be there'd just be kids pointing at him in the street, calling him Gaijin.
Yeah. Or Godzilla, either way.
No, actually, given your height, Godzilla is a fair bet.
My point is, it's a series in which you play an unnamed character. I call them Hiromu Nakamura after like mashing the names of two wrestlers that I like. And the game starts, and he's been sent off to a carer. He's gone to a new school, he's been transferred, because on his way home from his previous school, he saw a man, what looked like sexually assaulting a younger woman, trying to force her into a car. And unfortunately, that older man was a man of massive influence, so he got a criminal record, absolutely upended out of his life and put into this new school. And you go to this new school and there's not so much a story, although the way it frames it is you play a part of like Phantom Thieves. Yeah, Phantom Thieves. And it's like a group of people and you don't find out what they're doing until a little bit later on. But he's doing something in a casino, the young hero, and he gets captured, beaten the hell out of, and he gets sent to an interrogation room. And the framing device for the way the story's told is he says, oh, this is, tell me how this all happened. Tell me how we got to where we are today. And it's all told through flashback, which is never a thing I like, but it's not a common thing in games. But if you're new to Persona, which in this gaming world would basically mean you're the only person other than me who's new to it, because I played the Shin Megami Tensei games, but weren't Persona, before Persona was even a thing, it feels like.
So, hang on, did you play Lucifer's Call then?
Yeah, I did, all that sort of era. Okay. Before, like, right. Shin Megami Tensei was, like, even, they even dropped that now, haven't they?
Okay, you're fine then, because one of the things I've noticed with the Persona fans is people tend to call them out if they haven't played any of the Shin Megami Tensei games, if they've only played Persona, and that's all they like, well, you know, you're a bit of a lukewarm fan, aren't you? You've not played any of the other Shin Megami Tensei games.
It goes back to that era when all I was doing on PlayStation 1 for about 5 years, was playing like JRPGs. I got through a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Lucifer's Call was a weird game.
It was like, was that the Pokemon one, basically, with demons?
You're thinking of Jade Cocoon, aren't you?
No, I'm not. It's a Shin Megami one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those games that came over here in those halcyon days. But my point is, what a Persona is you play this guy and you got to make sort of complements your life between being a high school student, doing your studies, learning, making friends, and basically going into this phantom world where you've got to get rid of people's sort of, not so much neuroses, but desires as well. Kind of similar to what they did in Ni No Kuni. With certain bosses there did that too. And you got to get rid of that by stealing a certain item, and there's like certain story, certain arcs, like specific to certain characters in the game. And what I like about that is, it's just so contrary to what a normal RPG is. The first one is how about it... I can say this because it's not a spoiler, it's the first one, it's like the earliest point in the game. But the first one is a volleyball coach who physically abuses his students to get them up to the right level. And he pushes himself onto one of the more attractive students. And that ultimately ends in sort of attempted suicide. Ooh. So it sounds sort of quite dark. But at the same time, I quite like that it is that. Because it's more real. It's more real. And oh, there's a princess that needs saving. Off you go and save the princess. And you get all the magic swords and the magic powers and the magic. And you're going to build a house out of clay or something. I don't know. It's just, I think that's the thing which is always evaded, what the RPG is. That sense of having like a place in the real world. It's always been a bit too reliant on the fantasy. And never, ever has there been a line in the sort of the contractual piece for like an RPG game which says, rule number one, you play a role. Rule number two, must be fantasy. Absolutely must be fantasy. But somehow we've got this situation where that is actually the case. You know, so Rob was talking about how, you know, Atelier is different because it's just being itself when with other stuff, like in JRPGs is very samey.
Yeah.
But I think this is exactly the same because it's looking at the real world. It has the fantasy stuff because there's a character who's consistent through it called Morgana, which is basically a cat, a talking cat.
Yeah.
Got personas, which is sort of like monsters, which are expressions of your soul as monsters, and you can attack with them. So it has the fantasy elements. It just doesn't put all of its cards in that deck, if you see what I mean.
So hang on. When you mentioned the kind of Shin Megami Tensei version of Pokemon, aren't you talking about Persona?
In a degree, yeah, because you collect friends, and the main character, one of his powers, I'm just going to call him Hiromu because he doesn't have a name and I want to call him something.
Yeah,
Hiromu, he has the ability to sort of swip and swap between multiple personas.
So,
because ironically, I want to say that, you know, Undertale was sort of like, celebrated for you being able to talk to monsters and humanize them like that.
Yeah.
You can do exactly the same here.
But no one's celebrating it for that.
No, you can do that. They can give you money, and you can let them run off and be free. They can give you something, or let them become part of your persona. I love to use the word army because you don't get that many. But yeah, it does some interesting stuff, you know. I don't know. It's one of these games where you can spend like literally hundreds of hours in the sort of the socialization aspects of it, and I think that's perfectly fine. But I honestly think it's better when it's telling like a straight RPG story.
Yeah.
Because it's like that, it's going back to the open world stuff. The open world is just kind of a meandering experience. You do get characterization in there. But I'm getting much more and more old school as the more reliance on open worlds becoming a thing.
Yeah.
It's like a curated, direct experience. Yeah. And I think the RPG aspect is much more of that.
Yeah. So which part is the more challenging then, I've got to ask? Is the part where you're basically being the Phantom Thief with the personas the most challenging, or is the Japanese high school part the most challenging?
The Japanese high school, because it's just time management. It's not difficult. It's just what you do in the time that you're given.
Okay.
Which I guess is kind of reflective of real life, I suppose.
And do you make lots of friends?
If you want. I mean, the first friend you make is a delinquent called Sakamoto, and I just want me and him to be bezies, and that's it.
I was about to say, that's you sorted, isn't it?
Screw the rest of the school. I just want to be bezies with the delinquent.
With the guy with the, what's it called again? The hairstyle that sticks out like that?
Oh, yeah, he's got a pompadour. He's just got like sort of bleached blonde hair, and he's like a failed member of the track team.
He is a true delinquent then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it, you know. And one thing, it's fabulously flamboyant and stylish.
Yeah.
Its style is really something to marvel upon. But at the same time, it's wonderfully old-fashioned, you know, in the sort of the turn-based stuff, the dungeons. Yeah. You see somebody, the screen cracks apart, and you fight a boss, and there's, like, options, and you pick down from options. Because as flashy as Final Fantasy 15 and all the things that sort of have that free roaming, moving about RPG, yeah. The heart wants what the heart wants, and just turn-based RPGs are the best.
See, that's the thing. The Atelier games are always turn-based RPGs.
So I'm really liking Persona, but for literally none of the reasons that everybody else does.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to have to play this game because it sounds... I got bored of playing the Persona games literally because nobody would shut up about them.
Oh, I'm just going to play it and enjoy it. I don't feel the need to comment on every move I make to everybody I know.
But you understand what I mean? When Persona...
Yeah, it's kind of the same with Portal, though, wasn't it? That was exactly the same.
You know, when Persona 4 came out, because nobody really talked about Persona 3 or... Persona
this 3, game celebrates the 20th anniversary, so yeah.
Nobody talked about Persona 1 or 2, but then Persona 4 came out, and then everybody was talking about Persona, and Persona 4 was suddenly the only game that ever existed.
Yeah. They do kind of... the fans of it compartmentalize.
Yes, he made it, Andy. He made it to the end of the word.
So, yeah, I really, like I said, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But for literally none of the reasons that anybody else is.
Yeah.
There's no right way to enjoy a game. You make your own enjoyment. Yeah. So I think that's perfectly a valid way to look at it.
Yes.
It definitely is a series that seems to have just come out of nowhere. And I hear a lot of things about it. And I haven't really got into the series, but... It sounds really good from what you're saying, as well, for different reasons than what everybody says.
Yeah.
It incorporates that over their mobile phones as well, so you can have like text messages with a bezzy mate, me, delinquent bezzy mate.
with your fake mate.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not fake. How dare you? Best friends for life.
It's funny because you did Danganronpa the last time, didn't you? Danganronpa 1 and 2.
I think it's just... Danganronpa, I'll be honest, if I was going to use one word to describe it, it'd be hateful.
See, if I was going to use one word to describe it, I'd say try hard.
You're hyphenating there.
Well.
But yeah.
You understand what I mean.
But if I was going to use one word to describe Persona 5, it'd just be warm.
Really?
Yeah, because it's one of those games where it's not trying to... I know the style is very flamboyant. It doesn't feel like it's trying too hard. You know those games where you just sort of sit down and... It's exactly the same with you and Atelier.
Yeah.
It's just sit down and enjoy it.
Yeah, it has that calming influence on you. You're not playing it for the same reasons that everyone else is playing it. And the sad thing is that Persona 5 is getting a lot of recognition because of the style and everything like that. But the Atelier games still don't get near half the recognition they deserve in the West, I think. Because they're very...
It'll need that. There's too many of them for one.
Yeah, it's 18 games in the series.
And it just need that one breakthrough title.
Mm.
The weird thing is, the Atelier games have been around for so long now, and I reckon that the next game, or the one after that in the Atelier series, might actually be the one that finally cracks the Western market.
So in about 6 months then?
At the rate they're progressing, you know, from game to game now, the developments that they're putting in from Gust and from Koei Tecmo, it is actually surprising because they are completely going left field. I mean, the last trilogy that they did, the last trilogy was basically set on a world where all the water is drying up and the planet is slowly dying, and you have to find the cause and find a solution for it over the course of three games with different characters. And that was so very different to the whole, oh yeah, there's a big bad who's going to destroy the world. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a lot more kind of real world based, but based in that world rather than our one. And that's why I like the Atelier games. It's like an alternate reality thing.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
You know, and not a high school in sight, thank God. Because I think that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of sore with the Persona games. It's always a bloody high school.
Oh no, but the whole thing about it is it's not supposed to be like a subservient member of the high school.
Yeah.
The things that wants you, that gives you your power, says basically wants you to be a delinquent.
Yeah, but
rebel against everything.
That's what annoys me. It's this whole anime thing that creeps into JRPGs all the time.
Oh, no, but it's not like, oh, happy anime, super world where everything's in high school is perfect and it's so lovely, which is what a lot of these series do.
Oh, no,
like,
the series mainly have, oh, yes, you can only save the world if you're a Japanese high schooler because adults have no power whatsoever and don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine, but I don't think this really does it as bad as some things do.
Oh, no, I'm not saying Persona 5. I haven't played it, so I'm not saying saying anything about Persona 5. But Persona 4, that was one of the things that annoyed me about it. I just kept thinking, well, where are the adults?
Oh, there's adults in this.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
you literally
one of them
say...
looks like the high school, what do you call them, the... head of the secondary school, I can't remember the name, the Prime Minister, what's the word?
Hang on, the Prime Minister? Are you talking about Shinzo Abe?
Headmaster.
Right, okay.
The headmaster of the school looks like a Jabba the Hutt.
Hang on, does he keep a Princess Leia in a gold bikini next to him at all times?
Maybe. You know how long these games are? Maybe.
So
yeah, that's all we have time for.
Yeah.
We got a lot of games to get through, so we're going to be hitting you thick and fast with Press X.
Yeah.
You won't be able to look for Press X. There'll be cow bottoms with massive X's on everywhere you can look.
That's a good image.
Yes. Branding!
Yeah, exactly. You got to get your brand out in the world,
yes.
You know, and that's what we're doing.
Yes.
That's exactly what we're going to do to sort of sell ourselves to the world. We're just going to go rogue with like a brander to the nearest farm and just do that. And then probably get arrested after 2 days.
Yes. I want a cattle prod.
No, that's a different thing altogether. But anyhow, yeah, that's all we have time for on this edition of Press X. We'll be back very soon. But if you enjoyed this and you want to support it, head over to iTunes, subscribe, share us with your friends, head over to thegeekshow.uk, any of the above, and we'd be very appreciative and it'd help us a great deal. But until next time, when we have lots of other games, a mix, hopefully no JRPGs, because screw those things. We have been part of the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Yes.
And I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I have been Rob.
And thank you very much for listening.
Bye.